Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1227, we present a Life Rattle classic by Lori Callis and a story from New Life Rattle writer Shane Driver. Tonight's featured stories lay bare the gut-wrenching pain of divorce, the raw emotions experienced by every family member. No one escapes. With a reserved approach, both writers capture low-key details that build to a climax. You know where things are going, and you don't really want to hear how things end, but step by step you're caught up in the events. Our first writer, Lori Callis, born in Hamilton in 1963 and raised as an only child. Her family moved and lived in various neighborhoods around Toronto, then Mississauga and Etobicoke. Lori left school when she was 16 and worked as an office job at a transport company. She had her first son at 18, married, then had her second son at 27. She returned to school in 1995 to study art and graduated from university in 1999. Divorced and her sons grown, Lori moved to Hamilton in 2008, where she intends to focus on art making and storytelling as soon as she finishes fixing up her house. To support her compulsion to make art, Lori has worked as an art instructor, writer, editor, website developer, landscape designer, and managing director of Life Rattle. A long-term theme of her art has been the strained coexistence of humans and nature. At Life Rattle, Lori Callis helps other storytellers polish their words and find an audience. Let's listen now as Lori Callis reads one of her own stories, Today, tonight on Life Rattle.
Today, on Lakeshore Road at the foot of Cawthra, we wait for the traffic light to turn green. It's 8:30. Ed has just enough time to drop Carl and I off at home and still get to practice for 9. The light turns green and we still sit. The car in front of us waits for a hole in the traffic to make a left turn into Harvey's. I look at the clock again, 8:33, and wonder aloud to Ed, do you think we have enough time to stop at Harvey's? I don't expect Ed to agree. An extra stop will probably make him late for practice. He sure surprises me. He reaches down with his ring finger and flicks on the turn signal. The light turns yellow before we follow the taillights of the car in front of us into the parking lot. Behind the stainless steel counter, Jeff looks from beneath the brim of his uniform cap, past us, for our oldest son, Mike. When he doesn't see him, he smiles and says hi to us instead. Hey, Jeff. Mike's at home. He's sleeping, making up for the sleep he missed last night. You guys were out really late. You must be pretty tired tonight. Jeff blushes, smiles, and takes our order. 4 veggie burgers, 3 with cheese, 3 large fries. I cradle the warm paper bags in my lap as we pull back out onto Lakeshore at 8:45. At home, still in his shoes, Carl stomps upstairs to Mike's room. Hey, Mike! Mike! We've got Harvey's for supper. He thumps on Mike's bedroom door. Mike! Okay, Carl, I'm coming. We clear yesterday's dishes off the table to eat dinner. I've spent the last few days finishing paintings for our graduate show. We're hanging at the Living Art Center tomorrow. Ed made dinner yesterday. I should have done the dishes, just like I should have made dinner tonight. Ed wolfs down his burger in 4 bites, rolls up its paper wrapper, and tosses it into the empty Harvey's bag. Sorry, guys, I gotta go. It's after 9, but he hasn't complained about how late stopping for dinner has made him. Ed pauses to kiss us goodbye. Before he shuts the door, he calls out, Good night. I'll see you later. Feeling guilty for not getting up, I add a drive carefully to my have a good practice. It's almost 10 by the time we finish eating. Despite almost falling asleep at the table, Carl resists going up to bed. Unlike Mike, who even after his nap wants to turn in. Eventually, Carl follows him upstairs. I sit at the table and flip through the community newspaper, trying to drum up the energy to do the dishes. I should do the billing tonight for Ed's freelance computer work. We've lived on cash advances from Canadian Tire for the last few days because I haven't gotten around to entering last month's invoices. I decide to have a nap until Ed comes home. I promise myself that I'll get up, do the dishes, and the billing. Then I'll rent the truck early tomorrow to pick up the work at Sheridan College for the show. I go upstairs and lay on top of the bed fully dressed, so I don't settle into a sleep too deep to wake from. It's 10:30. I figure I have about 3 or 4 hours before Ed gets home. I fall asleep quickly. At some point, the cold wakes me, and I pull the blanket out from under me to cover up. The clatter of dishes wakes me at 3:05. Ed must be doing the dishes. Guilt rides over me. I close my eyes for just another second. At 4:12, I wake up and reach for Ed. He's not there. He must be in the basement doing his billing. I'll get up and finish it so that he can get some sleep too. At 5:33, I wake up again. Ed still hasn't come to bed. This time, my conscience goads me out of bed. In rumpled clothes, I walk downstairs in the semi-darkness. In the living room, Mike lies asleep on the couch. I pass him and go down to the basement. Silence meets me at the bottom of the stairs. Ed must have finished. I go back up, thinking I've passed him on the way down. Other than Mike asleep on the couch and Carl in his bed, the house is empty. Mike, have you seen Daddy? Mike shakes the sleep from his head. No, I couldn't sleep, so I came down and poured a bowl of cereal around 3. I guess I fell asleep. Isn't he home yet? No. I go into the kitchen and stack the dirty dishes. My cold hands shake as I scrape dried food off the plates. It's Thursday morning. Practice wouldn't run this late on a weekday. What should I do, Mike? Do you think I should call Steve or Eric? I lean on the doorframe and wait for Mike's answer. Through the window behind him, I see Ed's car turn onto Queen Street from Seanmar. There he is. Mike looks up at me. Where? There. He just turned onto Queen Street. Mike stands up to look out the window. When Ed's headlights move out of our field of vision, he goes upstairs to his room. I go back into the kitchen and run water into the sink, holding my hands under the tap to warm them. Ed's car pulls into the driveway. The engine shuts off. A string of minutes pass. I feel lightheaded and queasy walking to the front door. Looking out the sidelight into the paleness of the morning, I see Ed's face where he stands beside the car. He sees me and looks down. I go back to the kitchen and begin lowering glasses into the sink. Water gushes over them when I push them under. The front door opens and closes with barely a click. I hear laces rustle. Ed's shoes drop on the floor and his gear bag settles on the doorknob. A shadow glides before him into the kitchen. It's not good, is it? I don't look over to where Ed stands at the end of the counter. No, it's not. I slide down the cupboard, feeling the heat of my blood pulse against the floor tiles. Please, Ed, tell me fast. Pressing my hands against the heat of my face, I hold my breath. I'm in love with someone else. I'm leaving you. Standing up, I steady myself on the counter and stare at the floor as I walk, past Ed, upstairs to the bathroom, where I press and turn the knob to engage the lock behind me, then lean against the damp towels that hang on the back of the door until the closeness of the bathroom becomes unbearable and the quiet in the house grows so oppressive that I need to leave. A blast of sound roars from the fist-sized hole in my muffler as I start my car and back onto the road. I rev the engine until the needle hits red before shifting into the next gear. Noise rumbles out. It bursts the blue morning calm.
That was Lori Callis reading her story today. Our second story is a sneak peek at the writing of Shane Driver. Shane will be a featured writer at this year's Totally Unknown Writers Festival on November 21st, and you will hear four more of his stories in the coming weeks. In his story tonight, Shane gives us a different perspective of a crumbling family, that of a child horrified by what he and his brother see and powerless to prevent the inevitable. Let's listen now as Shane Driver reads his story, The Perfect House.
The Perfect House by Shane Driver. My older brother of 2 years sits on the curb crying in front of our new house. What's the matter? I ask. Shut up and leave me alone, Eric shouts. He is usually tough as hell, always getting into fights. He never cries. Come on, I say. Tell me. I don't want to move into this shithole, he says. The new house is much larger than our last and looks like a mansion. It sits on a corner lot with a basketball net, a two-car garage, and a big backyard. This isn't a shithole, I say. Shut the fuck up. You're an idiot. My parents, brother, and I have moved from Newmarket to Oakville. I'm 11, Eric 13. The October air is cool at 5:30 in the evening, and the orange sun sets deep in the western sky. We help my father carry in the last boxes. Dad leaves to drive the U-Haul truck back to the depot and pick up some takeout from Swiss Chalet. Mom doesn't feel like fixing supper. She peers out the kitchen window and sees Eric and me sitting on the curb. She looks concerned. Why are you so pissed off? I ask my big brother. I liked Newmarket, Eric says. All my friends were there, and pretty soon, Mom and Dad are going to get a divorce. My focus quickly changes. What do you mean? I don't let Eric answer my question. They are not. I don't think they are. That's because you're an idiot, he says. Mom and Dad fight a lot. My parents wanted out of Newmarket because Eric got into too much trouble, and I started to follow in his footsteps. My dad got a job in Mississauga, which is close to Oakville. I overheard my father several times say he didn't think we needed such a big house. My mom wanted a big house, so we got the big house. I don't mind the move. I stutter badly and fought a lot in Newmarket because kids made fun of my speech. Eric told me to fight any kid that ever made fun of the way I spoke. 2 weeks after we move, my parents give me and my brother what they call early Christmas presents. The gifts catch us by surprise. It's never happened before. I get a little white terrier and name him Seamus, and my brother gets a drum set. I love my dog more than anything in the world, and my brother treasures his drums. Eric and I arrive home from Montclair, a middle public school, 4 days later at about 4 in the afternoon. We open the door to our nice big home. Smash. So Mom chucks a navy blue vase at my father. It barely misses his head. You're an asshole, my mother screams. Yeah? Well, you're a crazy bitch, my dad responds. I gaze up at my brother in fright. Hey, it's okay. Let's go see Seamus, he says. We go to the backyard where my dog slouches in the corner with his ears pinned back. I see sadness in my pooch's eyes. The shouts coming from inside the house have startled him. I pick Seamus up to comfort him and begin to cry. My brother sits with us. I place Seamus on my lap, embrace him, and continue crying. What's happening to Mom and Dad? I ask my brother. They hate each other, he says. I sit against the new gold-colored fence. I don't understand how Mom and Dad can hate each other. I'm going over to Rick's house, Eric says. I'm not listening to this shit. I sit and scratch Seamus behind his ears as he solemnly positions his head on my lap. Mumbled shouts erupt from the windows of my parents' bedroom. They continue yelling at each other for more than an hour. My dad approaches me with a worried, apologetic look on his face. Where's your brother? He asks. At Rick's, I say. I try hard not to cry. Eric told me that I'm weak if I cry. Are you okay, pal? My dad asks. I can't help it. My tears start flowing. Why do you and Mom hate each other? We don't hate each other, Shane. Sometimes parents just don't get along so well anymore. Come with me to get your brother. Why? I ask. We all need to have a talk, he says. I don't want to leave Seamus. He's sad. You guys scared him. I'm sorry, pal. Seamus can come. We're silent during the car ride. My brother sits in the back seat of my dad's Ford Taurus and looks pissed off. Dad looks worried as he drives. I sit in the front seat while Seamus sticks his head out the window and enjoys the wind in his face. When we get home, Mom sits in the living room. Go see your mother, Dad says. I walk over to her. Are you okay, Mom? Sure, honey, she says. She uses the sleeve of her purple blouse to wipe the tears from her face. Everything will be all right. Dad and Eric enter the living room and sit down on our new beige sofa. I huddle with Mom and Seamus on the love seat. She places her arm around me and softly rubs the back of my neck. Kids, we need to talk, Dad says. We're going to move again. I look at my father with tear-filled eyes and ask, we're moving together, right? I'm feeling miserable, crushed, and worst of all, I know the answer. No, son, we're not, Dad says. Who am I going to live with? I'm not picking. Please don't make me pick, I shout. Don't worry, honey, Mom says. She pulls me in close. We'll figure that all out later. Your father and I want you boys to know that we will always love you and nothing will ever change that. Did I do something wrong? I ask. This has nothing to do with anything either of you boys did, my father replies. Please don't ever think that. Just like that, 19 years of marriage ends. My parents continue the screaming matches for the month that it takes to sell the house. I pack the last box in my Toronto Blue Jays themed bedroom. Nothing remains except Seamus, who frolics around with a tennis ball in the corner. My brother strolls casually into my room. He seems calm and undisturbed. I told you that you're stupid and that they're going to get a divorce, Eric says. He glares at me, shakes his head, and places the headset from his Sony Walkman in his ears. He turns, and as he leaves my room, I hear Bon Jovi's A Bad Medicine blare from his Walkman. "So much for the perfect house," I mumble to myself.
That was Shane Driver reading his story, The Perfect House. That concludes Life Rattle number 1227. My name is John Dunford. Lori Callis recorded Shane reading his story. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more new stories by Shane Driver.